This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj and joining me in the studio today is Juliet Jacobs and Sharmila Ganesan. It is 5 days to Christmas.
Yeah, 5 days
to 2020.
Oh my God.
I don't know whether both of you are equally delighted by the prospect of both.
I'm slightly terrified.
Slightly scared, yes, yes. But maybe a little delighted.
Well, what you might be delighted by is the first news story that we have today, which has got a little bit of positive news.
Yes, for a change. Reputed to have the power to fight everything from an itch to witchcraft, the Sumatran sea rau has been illegally hunted and traded to the point of vulnerability. But in some good news, as we were saying, poachers in Malaysia are facing stiffer penalties for illegally hunting this secretive mountain goat-like animal. So we're going to explore this positive development in the fight against wildlife crime. A new study has indicated that poachers in Malaysia are actually facing stiffer penalties for illegally hunting the Sumatran sea rau, which is listed as a totally protected species in Peninsular Malaysia's Wildlife Conservation Act 2010. So what that listing actually means is that the hunting and trade of this animal is strictly prohibited. But sadly, of course, they are still largely targeted for use in traditional Malay medicines, and they have occasionally been found to be served in wild meat restaurants.
So TRAFFIC, which is the Wildlife Trade Monitoring Network, just released a new study titled From Seizures to Conviction, Stronger Penalties for Sea Rau Offences in Peninsular Malaysia. And it assessed sea rau seizures and law enforcement outcomes and noted a notable improvement in convictions recorded in the past 2 years compared to previous years. So the report showed that a cumulative 1.7 million ringgit in fines and 93 months in prison time were given out by the courts in 4 convictions in the latter part of the study period beginning 2017. But in contrast, penalties in the 5 known convictions from 2005 to 2010 resulted in a cumulative fine of just 8,400 ringgit and just 3 months of jail. Mm. The highest penalties ever were for an offence in 2017, with fines totaling 1.2 million ringgit and 48 months imprisonment, which was given to 2 Malaysian men convicted of illegal possession of the animal's head and other parts in a forest reserve in the state of Pahang. The court also determined that the duo would have to spend a further 6 months in jail if they defaulted on the fines. Good on them.
Yeah. So just some background on sea rows. You know, they are a very elusive species, but there are six species of medium-sized goat-like or antelope-like mammals of the genus Capricornis. The Sumatran sea row is found, or as they say, occurs in Southeast Asia, where it's distributed across Peninsular Malaysia, southern Thailand, and in Sumatra, Indonesia. So it is the only sea row species that occurs in Malaysia and is found only on the mainland in Peninsular Malaysia. So the species is categorized, as you said, as vulnerable in the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature, or IUCN, with its population showing a declining trend. So aside from being hunted for trade, the species is also threatened by habitat destruction caused by limestone quarrying, by logging, and habitat fragmentation by roads, plantations, and other human-altered landscapes.
I've never seen a sea rau before.
Yeah, neither have I. I mean, they are very elusive, as we've mentioned, but they're becoming so rare that even if you do go to these places, it's really hard to find them. Okay. So, I mean, and you know, just like you, I think many people don't quite know the sea rau very well. So to get to know them a bit better and to find out more about the findings of this report, I reached out to Kanita Krishnasamy, who is the director of TRAFFIC Southeast Asia. So I started off by asking her about these little known creatures and also to get her to explain in greater detail the reasons for their declining numbers.
Yeah, they are a fairly elusive species, I suppose. They're commonly known as mountain goats, so they thrive in forests and ridges, so mountain peaks, limestone hills. You find them in places like forest areas, basically the states with good forest coverage, Perak, Pahang, Kelantan, Kedah. You even find them in Selangor, actually, in a few places along Ampang, for example.
Can we still find them there? Because I know I was reading that you could find them at one point on the Klanggates, the Quartz Ridge, but now not so much?
Well, nobody's actually done an actual population study, so we don't know exactly how big or small the population is. But yes, you can still find them in Selangor, including in the village areas.
Okay, all right. So they are listed as vulnerable to extinction. That's, of course, in the red list of threatened species by the IUCN, which is the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. So what actually has pushed them to becoming vulnerable? I mean, what sort of threats do they face?
Well, vulnerable essentially means that, as you said, you know, they face the high risk of extinction in the future, particularly if the circumstances affecting their survival right now is not remedied. Throughout the range, not just in Malaysia, I suppose the two biggest threats to their survival is habitat loss and poaching for trade. And habitat loss, you know, as I said earlier, they thrive on mountainous areas, ridge areas, peaks, limestone hills. These areas are susceptible to land conversion, and so that naturally causes a problem for them. And the other one, which is an area that traffic's working on more focused, is poaching for trade. And for trade purposes, it's primarily their horns and heads. They're used in traditional medicine. And we also know that there have been instances where the meat is consumed as well.
Okay, so this is in like restaurants that serve
wild
meat and everything. Okay, so I mean, I know this news, you know, that the poachers in Malaysia, they're facing a stiffer penalty for illegally hunting these creatures. That must be very welcome news for you guys. I mean, for everyone, actually. Why do you think there's been such an improvement in the enforcement and conviction of those involved in the hunting of sirau?
It's a combination. I would say really it's a combination of several things. I mean, those of us working in conservation and tackling wildlife crime issues have, you know, for a really long time wanted governments, any governments, to view wildlife issues and conservation issues as serious. And, you know, stiff penalties is a really, really good way to demonstrate that this is serious. This is an issue that we look at seriously. And the reasons for this have really been a combination of several things. The most important one for Malaysia is in the past year and a half, we've seen renewed vigor and commitment to tackle wildlife crime issues. And the Wildlife Department particularly has been leading on a lot of this work with the anti-poaching patrols and the law enforcement operations that have been ongoing for the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, success breeds success.
Yeah.
And supported by public pressure and public interest, what we've seen is that it has led to the formation of a new operation. It's just a few months old, between police and the Wildlife Department. It's called Operasi Bersepadu Khazanah.
That's right.
And quite a number of successes have already been achieved. You know, one of the more notable ones was that we've heard from police in the last month or so that investigations linked to any anti-money laundering have been initiated. And this is a really good indication of success, at least in terms of how wildlife crime is viewed, because we know that, you know, not everybody is a small-time sort of petty offender. Some people are a lot more organized in their operations, and there is a serious security issue, a national security issue, because we've seen cases where huge number of firearms have been involved in confiscations as well. And obviously, people are making some money out of this business. It's, you know, it's a crime business, and it's really good news that police and the Wildlife Department are looking into it in a more serious manner.
All right. But, you know, it wasn't always like this, was it? I mean, I know that the majority of cases, especially with the sirau here, recorded in the past, did not actually result in strong convictions. Why do you think that is?
Partly, I think, is because, you know, as I said earlier, there's new renewed commitment to deal with this issue. Partly also because the law itself was not as strong. So the Wildlife Conservation Act, the new act, which is in place right now, came into force in 2010, in June 2010.
Right.
That's when, you know, we see fines go up to $500,000 or 5 years imprisonment per charge for some species like the sirau. But in the past, the old Wildlife Act, the fines only go up to about 3,000 ringgit. In some cases, it can go up to 6,000 or 15,000 ringgit, but really the maximum fine itself was very, very low. The maximum fine right now is much higher, and because the offenders face, you know, pretty stiff penalties, they all want their day in court. They want to try and fight the case.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen a lot of improvement from the prosecution perspective, and the interest and commitment to pursue this is really steadily growing year on year. And it's not just unique to sirau cases. In May this year, we saw, you know, Malaysia give out really huge landmark. The courts, in fact, gave out this landmark fine for two Vietnamese individuals who were fined, arrested, prosecuted, and eventually convicted for illegal possession of, they had sirau, they had leopard parts, sun bear parts, and they will find 1.56 million ringgit.
That's wonderful.
That's pretty significant. Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very significant. And they also got 2-year imprisonment. So it's a good start. I would say we're setting a really good track record, and we really want to see this continue. Mm-hmm. Not just in terms of, you know, the interest and commitment from the law enforcement agencies themselves, but also from the judiciary, the courts. Mm. You know, the government can try a case as strongly as it can, but ultimately it's up to the judges to issue the fines and the penalties.
So, I mean, what do we know about those people who have been caught and convicted? I mean, is it mostly Malaysians, or, you know, you mentioned there were some Vietnamese people caught. Is this like part of a larger network at play or something?
I mean, if you're looking at just the cases that we looked at for Sirau, in each one of these incidents, they were largely Malaysian. So over 80% of the cases actually involved Malaysians. Mm-hmm. A number of foreign nationals, particularly Indonesian and Vietnamese, were also arrested. And we are seeing, you know, more and more cases involving foreign nationals in poaching and in our forests. And they are there for various illegal sort of means. Mm-hmm. And they are in the country sometimes for legal purposes, for employment. Sometimes some of them have entered the country illegally, or they overstayed their permits and their passes. But they are in our forests. But what we know is that, you know, each one of these cases would involve more than one person. You know, our past and current knowledge and information shows that hunting and trade is an organized business. You know, it's not just one person or two persons. You might have these odd cases here and there, but when you're going into a forest, you spend several hours, sometimes several days. It is organized business, and these are the networks that the law enforcement agencies right now are placing emphasis on in terms of investigations.
Okay. You know, I was reading that a lot of the seizures that have actually taken place, they were also a result of public tip-offs. So, you know, what can the public do if they come across any sort of illegal wildlife trade in Malaysia?
We always say just report. You know, we really can't reinforce how important this is, because every piece of information, you know, however small you think it is actually part of a larger puzzle. And it's so, so vital that people working on the ground get that information. So there's several means in which people can report. Traffic, we run an app. It's downloadable for free on Android or Google Play. It's the same thing, isn't it? On Android or Apple. And it's called the Wildlife Witness app. It's free. It's absolutely free. Mm-hmm. It's a very easy and straightforward way to report, and you can choose to remain anonymous or not, which is good for us because we can get in touch with you in case more information is needed. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, MyCat, which is a coalition of NGOs in Malaysia, including Traffic, also runs a hotline. And we encourage people to report. The number is 019-356-4194. Or people can also choose to report to the Wildlife Department, to Perhelitan, directly. They also run a hotline. And the number is a 1-800 number. So it's 1-800-885-151. It's pretty easy. And again, if there's anything that anyone is suspicious of in terms of, you know, you think something is not right where wildlife is concerned, just report it. It's up to the authorities to investigate, to check, and to take the necessary action.
Right. And I mean, one last thing I wanted to ask you, you know, a lot of this has to do with people's consumption, right? I mean, there wouldn't be a supply for it if there wasn't a demand. So how can we get people to change their attitudes or perception, especially towards the Sirau? I mean, busting myths like how they are reputed to fight everything, as, you know, your report says, from an itch to witchcraft, you know, and, you know, just get people to stop eating its meat.
I think people just need to be, they just need to read up, you know, need to educate yourself. As you said, you know, I mean, when we went to this place, it was just this person manning a roadside stall, and they showed us this pamphlet. And you get the usual ones, you know, for that people think traditional medicine can cure your wounds, your cough, your whatever. And then there were these really, really strange ones, the, you know, protection from witchcraft and demons, helping to deal with angry people or a child who's lazy to study, or helping you face an interview. I mean, come on, we're talking about logic here, and we're dealing with a rare and threatened species, and it's a little bit surprising that a rare and threatened species like this is being persecuted because of really unfounded superstitions. Mm-hmm. People just need to read up, need to educate themselves about truth and myths. And more importantly, we're talking about a species that is so rare and threatened in Malaysia. And Malaysians need to have a little sense of what we own. Take ownership of the wildlife that does occur in Malaysia. Mm. A species that is being persecuted for trade. And have a little bit more pride in Malaysian wildlife and spot conservation efforts, spot law enforcement effort. Just read up. Just start by just reading up and learning about these issues.
So that was Kanita Krishnasamy, the director of TRAFFIC Southeast Asia. TRAFFIC also quoted the Perhelitan Director General, who is Abdul Kadir Abdul Abu Hashim, as saying that he hopes that the strong enforcement action and penalties handed out by the courts would send a clear message to Malaysians to stop believing in unfounded superstitions that are compromising the survival of a unique species, of any species. Basically.
Any species, yeah. That's right. And I don't know, what do you guys think? Can we ever hope, you know, to balance the needs of these endangered wildlife, like the seerah, for example, but also while respecting a community's cultural beliefs? Because I think we've seen it also for, like, bears with the gallbladder, right? It's very entrenched in traditional Chinese medicines, for example. I mean, do you think there's a middle ground that we can achieve?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you take the simple example of shark's fin, right? For so many decades, people were just adamant that you cannot remove this aspect from a wedding dinner because it's face and culture, and it cannot be done. But we've seen the change happen.
That's right. And it often comes over, I think, a lot of times with the younger generation of people realizing that this is not a tradition that needs to be carried on. But I also think it's very important to get people within that community, people who grew up with those practices, who are more familiar with the nuances of what this might mean, to also speak up. Because sometimes when someone from outside speaks to you, you might feel like you're being victimized, that your beliefs are being made light of, which is why, you know, when they get someone like Jackie Chan to talk about tiger hunting, then it actually, I feel like it speaks louder than something that feels like it's being imposed from outside.
But you know, with something like the seerah, for example, because it's already banned, you're not supposed to have it, but that makes it all the more enticing.
Especially for me, I feel like the exotic meat aspect, for instance, right? Some of it comes from that, the sort of being able to say the thrill that I've tried this meat. Again, you know, those are just, I feel like it's a very selfish motive. Yeah, it's so selfishly motivated. I don't know how to get through to people about that.
Yeah, but you know, like as Kanita said, I guess, you know, just really take ownership of things that are found only in Malaysia, in Peninsular Malaysia. Just take ownership of our wildlife and, yes, just stop being selfish.
Yeah, and I guess if you're talking about selfishness or just thrill seekers, yes, higher penalties is probably the only thing. Like if you're really sort of, if it's punitive, then people will realize it's not worth the risk.
Yeah.
I realize that we started off the week, talking about Malaysians having to take ownership of our parks.
That's right, we did.
So this is a nice way to wrap up the week as well. So that's all the time that we have for this story. But then let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can call us at 03-7733-2900. Have you ever seen a seerah? Did you know about seerahs?
I knew about them, thankfully, but I've never seen one.
Okay, so let us know. We're going to go off for a quick break. And what we're going to do is we're going to leave you with Runaway by the Super Furry Animals.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.